We're definitely going to cover all the content you need to pass that particular exam. So why not kind of jump onto the VAT system when we're finished, and just get that out of the way for those of you who need to do that. So without any more ado, then let's get into to the learning objectives. What is it we're going to be covering this morning? I'm going to start off really by just looking at the overall senior managers and certification regime, just really highlighting some of the key components. I know this will be a refresher for you, but good to get on the same page. And as I said, with one eye in that testing mind as well, and just again walk through, remind ourselves the key senior management function roles which need individual approval from the FCA. And then what we're going to do is we're going to really dig in to the SMF 16 role itself, really just unpacking the key elements and responsibilities of those role holders. I'll introduce something to you that some of you may already be aware of and using, the Regulatory Initiative Grid, which is a great tool for compliance directors. And then I'll start to look through some more practical tools that we can use to help it enroll, things like an annual compliance calendar, and some of the internal audit requirements. Both tools are available as part of your membership of IFAC. And then finally, particularly interesting for those of you who are moving into role, look at the accreditation process, what the FCA require for those people moving into role. I always think it's no bad thing either for those who are currently sitting in the role, just to remind ourselves of some of the key requirements, because nothing ever stays the same. Everything's always evolving. A lot of, obviously, you know, we have to evidence ongoing kind of competence and capability in these senior roles, don't we? So that's what we'll be doing over the course of the next hour or so. In terms of the senior managers and certification regime, then, as you know, this is a regime that was introduced by the FCA, which now applies across all FCA regulated firms, with the exception of appointed representatives. And it was a very kind of clever, I think, approach from the regulator, because it knows that it can't possibly know what's going on in each firm on a day by day basis, even with kind of the regulatory data that we're sending to them and their oversight of things like the Ombudsman Service. So they actually made firms, not regulators, responsible for not just the handbook and the FCA requirements, but also for senior managers, and in particular those certification roles as well, more of which in a tick. So as you know, the regime has three key areas. The first one that is very pertinent to you is the senior managers regime. So this, as you know, relates to the authorization and accountability, key word that, accountability. So we're on the hook here, of specified senior roles, of which, of course, the SMF 16 is one of those required roles, as you know. So before we can take the role on, we have to go through the necessary regulatory checks and approvals. The other piece was around the certification regime, which made firms rather than the FCA responsible for doing the fit and proper test for controlled functions and material risk takers. So, you know, you maybe have a joint role as a workers advisor, as well as running your business and fulfilling one or more of these SMF roles. But of course, you know, the fit and proper test applies to you in the advisor role, because the handbook defines you as a material risk taker. So there could be both elements of the regime lying to you, as will the third and final element, the conduct rules, because as you know, that sets out the standard of knowledge conduct for everyone who works within firms. So the need to have the right to train and development and to be able to evidence kind of competency and you know what you're doing. So as I say, quite a comprehensive change to the regulatory regime from a supervisory perspective. They also have categorized firms into one of three categories. As you know, conscious, we're just kind of getting back in the same page. This is not new information. So you're either treated as a limited scope firm, and that would apply to anybody on the call today who's sole trader. But most firms, as you know, are categorized as core firms. So clearly you would fall within that category, I guess, the majority of people. And then the enhanced regimes for large firms. So we're talking about assets under management of at least 50 billion pounds. So the PRA type of prudential regulated firms would kind of fit into that category. So so that's kind of just talking to this new senior managers and certification regime and just putting a little bit of meat on the bone there. Continuing in that theme then. So as I've already said, senior people who are going to be undertaking these specified senior management roles need to be approved by the FCA before you can actually start doing that. So firms need to request authorization from the FCA using, you know, Long Form A. And as part of that application process, what you will have need to have done, as you know, is obtained and submitted regulatory references, but also criminal record checks. Okay, so I'll talk more to that in a minute and exactly what it is that the FCA are looking for. Also for certification functions, as we've said, those roles that are defined as material risk takers, i.e., you know, financial advisors would probably be a good example. Well, they're no longer approved individually by the FCA. Only advisors working for appointed representatives who still form part of the old approved persons regime are individually approved. So now firms are responsible for that, as you know. So again, we have to get the standard regulatory references. That's not optional, of course. That's mandatory prior to appointment. And then we also have to do this annual fit and proper test. So both at the time of appointment, but then on an annual basis, a little bit like having to renew our car tax, I guess. So to keep on the road as an advisor or in a material risk taker role, you have to go through and pass this annual fit and proper test. And again, just as a reminder, the three component parts, honesty, integrity, and reputation. What does that actually mean? Well, this is what I said. This is basically looking at criminal records. So has anybody been convicted of a criminal offence or had any civil proceedings taken against them? In particular, specifically for fraud and dishonesty, for very obvious reasons. Slightly broader than that, firms are also required to satisfy themselves that the individual hasn't been subject to disciplinary proceedings, either from, you know, a regulatory authority, a professional body, or their previous employer. So, a little bit of work to do there in terms of getting the I's dotted and the T's crossed. In addition to that, the second element is around competence and capability. So this means basically, has the individual in this material risk taker role, can they satisfy any relevant training and competence requirements in relation to the controlled function that they're performing. So remember, you're in a controlled function as an SF16. So the FCA are looking at, do you have the knowledge, skills, and experience to do the job? Have you demonstrated that you are suitable to perform and meet the responsibilities of the controlled function? So, this training session will unpack in a little bit more detail, specifically what some of that training might look like. But of course, also it's about evidencing, isn't it? This is the whole thrust of the FCA. How can you evidence that you are performing and meeting the responsibilities of your role? And then third and finally, financial soundness. So this is where we need to check in. Has the subject been had any county court judgments or any other similar awards made against their name that weren't satisfied in a reasonable period of time, or indeed remain outstanding, or have they kind of made any arrangements with creditors, that kind of thing? So still continuing our refresh around the senior managers regime in terms of the certification piece, so particularly pertinent to your good selves and the SMF 16 role. As you know, you are required to have documented statement of responsibilities, which kind of does what it says in the tin. It's basically your job description pertinent to the SMF 16 role. It's got clearly defined tasks and responsibilities laid out in there, hopefully. And in addition to that, one of the other kind of key elements of the role, and this is what makes it kind of these SMF 16, 17, etc. roles different, is prescribed responsibilities. In other words, what are you accountable for, which is absolutely critical. This is the thing that you're on the hook for, and which the FCA cleverly in this new kind of regime will reach through. So just as they hold a firm accountable, they'll hold you individually accountable. And we've seen some examples, haven't we, in the recent past of individuals being held to account and enforcement action and sanctions being applied to them by the FCA, unfortunately. So basically, it means that in this SMF 16 role, you've got a duty of responsibility. That's kind of the punchline here that I was describing. Because you are individually accountable, the FCA will reach through, kind of tap you on the shoulder metaphorically, if the wheels come off the bike, or indeed you can't evidence that this all aspects of the role are being actioned. So let's just again remind ourselves of the to whom the senior management function roles kind of apply. What are the roles? So we've said it's the senior people, obviously, within the business with the greatest control, and the greatest potential both to set and influence the culture within a business, which is something becoming increasingly interested in. Consumer duty being another the latest example of their interest in tone from the top. So there are some roles that they determined to be governing roles specific to the core firms. So as you can see there, you'd expect kind of the chief executive, any executive directors that you might have in the business. If you are working as a partnership or LLP, then the SMF 27 does that instead. And if you do have a chair, I know not all of you will have a chair, but they're also categorized as a governing function. But probably of more interest to you this morning is the SMF 16 role, which is designated as a required function Which I think just demonstrates the importance that the FCA kind of attach to this role. It's not a surprise, is it? We work to an FCA handbook with a whole kind of range of principles and more specific rules, as well as a wider statute. And kind of in the FCA's eyes, somebody within a firm has to take responsibility for the interpretation of the principles and rules, and to make sure that that's actually happening on a day-to-day basis within the firm, and it's being monitored, being risk assessed, being managed and mitigated, and it's being reported on, and it's got good visibility within the business. So definitely of the required functions, I would say that the SMF 16 is very much in the spotlight. And I know some of you will probably be doing a joint role. You'll be doing SMF 16, maybe SMF 17 as well, taking responsibility for money laundering, because you could argue there's some alignment there. Now, for those of you who are currently going through the process to gain your authorization, or indeed those of you who are on call who are kind of experienced in the role, I just wanted to point out a document to you, which is actually one of the FCA documents. It's actually worth reading when you're going to take this role on and sit in the seat. And basically, it's FCA's guidance for the assessment of SMF 16, 17 candidates. And you can pick it up in the usual way just by interrogating their website. But why it's really useful is it sets out the expected skills and knowledge from kind of the training that you've had or are going through, and the experience that you've developed as you've been, in the profession, that the FCA believe are required to be effective in the role. So it's a good read, and it's clearly sets out, knowledge and skills. And I would actually do it as a bit of a self audit, as you like, particularly if you are putting your name forward to the FCA for approval. It's great to know exactly what it is they're looking for. More of which later. So hopefully that's useful. Let's now kind of start to move away from just the more general view of senior managers and certification regime, and let's take a closer look at the SMF 16 role. So as you know, it's a requirement by the FCA that all firms, regardless of their size, appoint somebody to sit in this compliance officer, compliance director role. We're using the moniker SMF 16 because that's the one we were given from the new regime. As I've said a few times now, whilst it is an absolutely critical role, the FCA have conceded that, it doesn't need to be full time. We need to make appropriate to the businesses within the marketplace. So, it can very much be combined with other roles, in line with the size and structure of the firm. However, having said all of that, you've got to take it seriously, because the bottom line is that the role carries regulatory responsibility and accountability for the firm. So you must be able to demonstrate, particularly those of you who, for this is going to be a part-time role, and I guess for most of us in the real world, we have to wear a number of different hats. One of the kind of provocations I would give to you to challenge you is, if I was coming in to do like an internal audit on behalf of IFAC, how could you evidence to me, as an internal auditor, that you are spending sufficient time on it to meet your responsibilities and accountabilities that you've kind of documented and you're going to be held to? The other thing, as I say, and this is this evidential piece for me, it's no good having the most perfect kind of compliance, risk management, and mitigation regime in place if it doesn't have the right and appropriate level of visibility. So it shouldn't come as a surprise that SMF-16s are actually required to report to board or other kind of management structure if you're in a partnership about how the firm is complying with the rules and regulations set out in the handbook, and what's actually happening. It has to have sufficient level of visibility. Therefore, when you read into the SMF-16 requirements, the FCA's expectation is that the individuals will be sufficiently senior to be able to have that visibility and access, and challenge with a small c colleagues and other members of the board or management structure around compliance and risk where that's appropriate. And in addition, if that weren't enough, not only have you got to make sure that the firm overall is squeaky clean from a compliance and regulatory perspective, but you've also got to continually to demonstrate your ongoing competence and capability as an individual to do the role as well. So you've got that kind of dual requirement, really. You're keeping your own personal house in order, but much wider than that, your remit is to make sure that the firm is doing likewise. Okay, so in terms of picking up on that theme around competence and capability, and again, building on the fact that the FCA have kind of articulated some of the knowledge, skills, and experience that they would expect to see of people coming into or holding this role, what I've done is I've kind of picked out four key areas that they identified that they are very kind of insistent that SMF-16 role holders must really be adhering to. Don't think there'll be no surprises here. So first and foremost, there's an expectation that you would be obviously trained, but also, and I think this is the important piece, keeping up to date with the relevant training. So here we go. This is like congratulations, because just by virtue of being on the call, this is something you can now evidence from a CPD perspective. And even if you don't have to take the test, why don't you? Because again, that's another piece of evidence. The other thing is probably more judgmental, really. So if people have to apply judgment, but how can you help them do that? How can you demonstrate that you have got the sufficient knowledge and experience to make the relevant compliance decisions for the business? Okay, so just think about if you were going into the role or applying for the role, how can you demonstrate that? And how can you demonstrate that on an ongoing basis? So I think one of the key ways you can do that is to show an audit trail of the kind of decisions you are making and the judgment calls you are making. Isn't that the beauty of compliance? It's not always kind of black and white. We live in a world of grey. How can you show you've exercised your knowledge and experience to make judgment calls around compliance decisions? It's also okay to get support from third parties, and I know as IFAC members, that's probably one of the attractions of belonging to the network, that you can there are support available to you, and the FCA are more than happy with that, because ultimately they want there to be no issues in the marketplace. Think about that's part of their wider strategic objective. Yeah, ensure relevant markets function well. Yeah, and then their operational objectives about protection of customers, etc. So if we're using external providers, good, that's fine. But what it doesn't do, obviously, it doesn't take away the fact that you need still to be competent. So you're using them really as third party experts. Neither will it take away your responsibilities and accountabilities. Unfortunately, you're still going to be individually on the hook for it. And I've talked a couple of times now about the fact that, you know, it's no problem for this role not to be done on a full-time basis. And for many of us, you know, it has to be done on a part-time basis just because that's what suits the business best. But the kind of the challenge, if you like, back from the FCA is, okay, that's fine. But you must be able to demonstrate that if you are doing it on a part-time basis, the kind of time and the input that you're spending is proportionate and sufficient in line with the needs of the business and the clients within business. Yeah, I'll get to where you find the back test later on in the session. So good question, and I will definitely answer that for you. So in terms of the key areas for responsibility, what we've said is, you know, that this is a pivotal regulatory role for all firms in the UK. Yeah, not only are you the accountable individual to the FCA from a compliance point of view, but what we've said is you're also required to evidence ongoing compliance for the firm, you know, kind of on a daily basis, really. So what does that look like? Well, first and foremost, what we don't want to do is to ever get ourselves in a position where we even inadvertently breach any of the handbook requirements. So what we must demonstrate that we're doing is taking all reasonable steps to prevent a breach. Now, I'm a realist and I've worked in financial services, like many of you, I'm sure, on the call for 30 plus years. It's great. It's a contact sport. From time to time, it almost inevitably something might happen. But as long as we can say, well, you know, we were doing everything that we could to prevent a breach, and any reasonable person looking at that will be able to say, you know what, all things considered, it does look like you were taking reasonable steps, and we all accept the fact that from time to time maybe circumstances slightly beyond our control, or that, you know, we are all human, mistakes do happen. Yeah. The other thing, and I think this is key really, that this is like any senior role, we can't just kind of rock back on our heels and be reactive to situations. Now, sure, sometimes we have to react at pace because something's just kind of blown up that we weren't expecting. But again, what we need to be able to demonstrate to the FCA or to the internal audit is we are proactively protecting the firm, the people that work within the firm, and the clients. So, you know, what are we doing, you know, to demonstrate that element of proactivity? And then are we applying the systems and controls fulsomely? You know, it's okay saying we've got systems and controls in place. That's only half the job. Yeah. What are we actually doing to apply? And I think one of the ways you can link that with proactivity is sometimes, you know, it's good to, you know, be seen to be revising, amending, tweaking systems and controls to make them more fit for purpose. You know, we've had a great example of an opportunity, should I say, to do that, you know, with the Consumer Duty. Maybe we've had to sharpen up one or two kind of key areas. So again, I don't want to keep advertising the FCA. That's not my job. But again, if you haven't done so already, particularly those of you coming new to role, let me just point out another document that's well worth reading. It's the FCA's policy statement 18/16. Again, easy to find on their website. The reason I point that out, I think it's really helpful because it it defines within that policy statement what the FCA considers to be kind of reasonable actions in terms of taking steps to prevent breaches. And it also specifies actions that have been taken against SMF 16s individually or firms when a breach of the rules has actually occurred. And it goes into detail as to why the FCA felt they needed to take enforcement action against one or both of the, of either the individual or the firm. So I think armed with that knowledge, again, it helps us, excuse me, prepare, helps us avoid, albeit inadvertently, any hot water that we want to avoid kind of getting into from a regulatory perspective. Okay, so moving on then. As I say, we know that SMF 16s need to have a statement of responsibilities. And I'm sure, particularly for those of you who are in role or those of you who are coming to role, you've either got them in place or they're well progressed. Now, you'll have your own approach because basically, as you'd appreciate, you can only really frame your statement of responsibilities based on your own firm. But just some suggestions from a best practice point of view, just to check that you've got your bases covered. What I guess somewhere in there, you'd expect to see, not only do you own the firm's overall court kind of risk framework, and but also that you're responsible for its ongoing development and maintenance. So to a certain extent, linking back to this proactivity, you're defining ongoing developments and maintenance of risk management and mitigation. Obviously, it probably goes without saying that you are responsible for the firm's compliance function and the oversight of that. But again, make that clear for people going new to the FCA for authorization. We have to send structure charts and show how this individual is responsible and has an oversight, has access, and the structure of the firm kind of acknowledges that. It also should talk to the fact that this isn't just an individual responsibility. What we've said is, what makes this role so kind of in the spotlight is it's not just yourself, but it's the overall kind of performance of the firm and the certification regime for compliance, risk management, and material risk takers. Everybody is kind of, it's all encompassing. You'd probably, it's reasonable to expect that somebody in compliance would be managing the complaints process as well, because there could be lots of alignment between complaints and compliance. And you'd also expect it to articulate in these responsibilities to tick that box off about this annual reporting requirement up to the board or relevant management structure that the rules and regulations in the handbook are being adhered to. And also that it isn't just about the firm, important though that is, that we're also taking a more holistic view of compliance, kind of a market-wide view, a sector-related view, and we are, as things change or we can see planned changes coming down the track, we are seen to be kind of responding to that in good time in order to make any necessary changes in our own particular businesses. So I'll definitely have something like that in that, and make sure that that was something I could evidence that I was doing. And one of the key tool to help with that is to use, again, something that I know some of you will be using. This might be a new document to others. It's something called the Regulatory Initiatives Grid. So as an SMF 16, it's not just about right here, right now. As we've already said, you've got to be forward focused. And this is a really useful tool to help demonstrate that that's exactly what you're going to be doing. You're going to be forward focused and you're going to take any appropriate actions to manage and mitigate risks. So this isn't an FCA document. It's actually, although they're a key kind of player in it, it's actually produced by something called the Financial Services Regulatory Initiatives Forum. So that's a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? You can see there, I've done a screen grab of the actual report. You can see the key players in that. It's a great document because what it does is actually sets out planned regulatory initiatives on a rolling 24 months basis. So, you know, you can see things coming, and those of us who've used the grid for a while, you know, you actually saw Consumer Duty come in and getting nearer as we moved into the implementation last year. So it's great because it helps you in your role understand and plan for potential regulatory change, and it gets updated every 6 months. So it, you know, the latest edition online is November 2023, and it should have been updated in May. But when I went on there to check it the other week, I got that little flag there because of this thing called the general election. They've actually they're in purdah, and they've delayed the publication. So I should have been able to show you the May 2004 grid now. So hopefully, once we get the election out of the way, they'll leap into action and produce the next version of the grid. So you might want to make a diary note for that. But for those of you who haven't seen it before, I'll just give you a little couple of slides with a bit of insight into it. So as you can see, it provides at a high level just an overview of changes to the proposed kind of regulatory landscape. So there you can see there's the Consumer Duty coming into force for closed products. Yeah, that we're all looking forward to, aren't we, in July of this year. And then in the document itself, further on into the document, once you've got this kind of flight path of initiatives, you can find the ones, as I've done there, that think, okay, that will affect us. Then there's another section where you can actually drill down into a bit more detail. So not only Consumer Duty, but I don't know if you're aware that the FCA are also reviewing the complaints reporting process. So they're in the middle of review at the moment, as you can see from that. And that will probably impact in the future, not least, you know, the regulatory data that we have to send up to them. I can see some changes coming there. So again, we were talking about, you know, proactivity, being able to demonstrate that we are kind of executing the role, and we've got this wider view of the marketplace. If you want to have sort of drop down more into to the firm, again, being able to evidence that we're on this role and actually doing it, you know, and let's make it easy for ourselves. You know, this might be one of hundreds of things we're having to do on a monthly basis. Critical though it is, it's just another kind of series of tasks. So one of the things that we could use is something like an annual compliance calendar, which would mean that, you know, we can schedule tasks in to do rather than trying to do them all at once, kind of at the end of a reporting period. Now, the compliance calendar, there's no kind of set template for this. This is something, again, as an IFAC member, you can access in the materials. It doesn't have to be complicated. In fact, the best compliance calendars follow the KISS principle. Yeah, so the simpler, the better. So here's one I just knocked together for myself. You know, here's an area or task. I'll give it a bit of more of a description, but most importantly, how often I need to do it and when I'm going to do it. And the real beauty of these compliance calendars, where I see them working really well, is that it gives visibility to compliance for you as the SMF16, and it also enables you to schedule work, but also where you're working with others, it gives them It's almost like an early warning and an expectation about compliance activity. And it just kind of demonstrates the breadth of compliance activity that goes on. You may need to involve others in some of the activity. So I'm not saying that this list is comprehensive, but the sorts of things you'd probably have on there is, your regulatory data returns. That would be on there. You may have somebody nominated within your business to get on and do that, but other people might have to send their data to them. So that would give it some visibility. Any regulatory changes? So we keep talking about consumer duty, but you're going to have to do your update report. I know there's some training for that coming up from IFAC on that. I would also stick things in there like board meetings if that's applicable to you, or partner meetings, because I wouldn't want to do it just on an annual basis, and I'm sure you don't. Keep a regular and often with an annual report as icing on the cake. Any requirements about the senior managers regime, not least this annual fit and proper test that we need to do. Anything that you're going to be doing from a business perspective to try and generate business, some promotions. Remember, we have to get our promotional activity kind of signed off, et cetera, et cetera. And also, training, part of the requirements of the certification regime is to demonstrate all staff within the business are well trained. So I would stick in there things like annual kind of anti-money laundering training. It's just be one example that I'd pick out the air. Yeah, any sort of regulatory training that you want to do, let's have it in, and then people can kind of see it come in, and you can plan for that activity. As I say, they're really good for making sure we don't try to do everything all at once. Visibility planning, great, great tool to evidence to an auditor that you're on your game, so to speak. And then on that theme, keep talking about kind of internal audit. This is a great resource that's available to you as IFAC members. It's as you can see there, it's the key events you'd expect to see in a compliance monitoring program. So it basically again gives great visibility to others in the business of key compliance activities. You can find it on the BAT system in the usual way in the product sector. I'll talk more to that in a tick when we talk about where to find these things at the end. I'm not going to go through it all. I just picked out some key areas really. So as you can see, effective supervision is something that IFAC would come in and audit. But this is a tool that you can use as well to do your own planning. So yeah, record keeping kind of goes without saying. Advice, suitability, consumer duty, TCF, all of that kind of thing. And why I like this document is it actually tells when the action is going to be taken, who's responsible for the action, and where, how often it kind of needs to occur. So it's sort of built on that compliance calendar. Another key section is about, have you got the right resources in place with the capital R, financial resources, capital adequacy, that kind of stuff. Human resources, IT resources, all that kind of stuff. Systems and controls, but particularly relevant to you. You're going to have some sort of dashboard, KPI measurement systems of your risk mitigation and compliance activities. Are they relevant, accurate, and effective? You're going to have to at least revisit them on an annual basis, if not more frequently, to make sure they're kind of fit for purpose and have been updated where necessary. Things, how important is business continuity these days? We're all targets, aren't we, of fishing expeditions and that kind of thing. And again, making sure that from SM&CR perspective, we are certifying our material risk takers as fit and proper, like widen that out, to the whole general training requirement. So say, a great resource which is available to you as part of your IFAC membership. As an SMF 16, you don't have to rely on IFAC. I know some firms use that as one of those third party kind of external expertise. But before you let them in the business, I guess you would want to do your own internal audit. That's certainly what I would do. So you're required to do that anyway and report back to the board or your partners, remember. So what sorts of things do you need to be worried about? Firstly, the firm's policies and systems and processes, are they kind of fit for purpose? So go around, kick the tires. Nothing can be set in stone. I'm a big believer of if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But also, making sure that things haven't moved on and the process and systems haven't moved with them, because things are always changing. The other thing from an internal audit point of view is don't get distracted into one area of the business. A good internal audit will be holistic, really. So it won't just focus on one particular area. Sure, you'll have to drop into things like the effectiveness of management from a compliance perspective, particularly if you're in a bigger business, how that's working from a supervisory point of view, from advisors and your power planning team, etc. But also more holistically than that. And obviously critical that you are able to demonstrate you're meeting all the requirements, particularly sensitively under things like the new Consumer Duty, which is coming up to the first report now, which, as you know, kind of has turbocharged things like TCF and vulnerable clients, etc. And then just from a general kind of risk management mitigation piece, has anything emerged in terms of training needs? So you've got your kind of bread and butter annual training requirements, but is there anything else that you can point to in terms of we've done some training on this because, again, I said that SMF 16s typically are owners of the complaints process as well for fairly obvious reasons. So again, it's a requirement that everybody in the business understands the timescales. Can you review? I'm hoping you've got not many complaints or zero, but and that it can be a problem in its own right because if we're not using it, we kind of have knowledge fade. So in the unlikely event we did get a complaint, does everybody in the business kind of know the relevant timescales? Could it go through the rapid resolution process? Or if not, what does the mandatory timeframes look like? What would you be your internal processes and who would take responsibility for dealing with the complaint? And are you aware of the potential penalties and sanctions that may emerge if you were to miss those deadlines? I know some of you probably will be jointly doing the SMF 17 role, and that's fine. But if you're not, if you're doing this role full time, a colleague of yours will be undertaking the SMF 17 money laundering role. But does everybody know how that works? But what happens when they're not present? Because that'll be a joint responsibility between you and them. So if they need to go on holiday, they may be out of the business. What would happen? Who is their kind of locum standing, and how does that actually work? Then, of course, it kind of goes without saying that GDPR data protection, if somebody exercised their right to request their personal data, how confident are we that we could meet the required time scales? What about breaches of process or security? What's our business contingency kind of look like? Even things as straightforward seemingly as change of address processes. A firm got into hot water, didn't it, a few months ago for bungling kind of a change of address and inadvertently sending an email to the wrong person with that change of address confirmation on it. So you see, it's quite comprehensive. Inducements and gifts. If you're taking a bit of hospitality, good luck if you have. No harm in that. But you know, there has to be a process in place for recording that. You have to maintain that for 5 years. And then I would be very kind of concerned about FCA focus points because you kind of know, don't you? Both from your own experience and knowledge and operation within the market, things like that, regulatory initiatives grid, and the guidance and notes that keep emerging from the FCA. But they're very much fixated at the moment on consumer duty and the implementation of that. And I think we all realise that they consider that is very much still work in progress. In addition to that, as you know, they're in the middle of a consultation about retirement income options. They've now gathered in all their information and they are now devising what I suspect will be some changes to how we undertake that process. And for those of you for whom it's relevant, you know, the off-panel processes as well, where you move off panel. And again, if you and I suggest you probably would have had to change the odd process to take account of the additional requirements and responsibilities of consumer duty, you know, not least you know, avoiding foreseeable harm and the communications with clients. So where you have made changes to process, can you evidence that you have checked that change has been received and kind of understood? And can you evidence the audit point where, you know, we've made the move? Is that well documented? Okay. For those of you who deal with insistent clients, you know, we know that that's something that is always of interest to the FCA. Again, are you happy with your process? Are you happy that, you know, you've got that's well honed if you go down that route in terms of the letter and information exchange that needs to happen? It's got the requisite sign-off processes in place. And has it got contingency baked into it, you know, the what happens question? And then for those of you who run a centralized investment or retirement proposition, you know, again, just check in its suitability and what the file requirements are. That's known and understood by all relevant people. So, you know, that's not an extensive internal audit, but some of the key elements I'd expect to see in an internal audit for you to be concerned about. The final part now is really just about accreditation. So some of you might be going, well, I don't need to worry about this because I'm already enrolled and I'm not going through the accreditation process. But I think it's quite helpful to know what accreditation looks like because it helps us just understand how we can demonstrate that we are maintaining our knowledge, skills, and competence to do the role. So first things first, the FCA would expect, remember that you have relevant training, and that training is up to date. So congratulations, you're actually on the training. And requirement, IFAC requirement is you pass the senior manager's certification regime financial exam. I'll show you specifically with a screen grab where that is on the BAT system. It's in the TNC section of the BAT system. Then there's the FCA application, you know, form to fill in, which is, if you can remember, for those of you who went through it, or if you're going through it now, I won't need to remind you, really complex process, but it's something that IFAC can support you in. So the long form A, you know, you have to get all the sections fully completed, and they are sticklers for every I being dotted, every T crossed. Yeah, and where necessary, provide them. If in doubt, provide them with additional information. That would be my kind of recommendation. That's kind of how they work, just like any auditor. Yeah. They expect to see, that statement of responsibilities as we covered on the earlier slides. So they'll look at that and they'll tr be trying to find any obvious gaps. So we had some suggestions for things that probably would be included as a minimum, and then you would build away from that, dependent on your business. For new applicants, they'd want to see your CV. Again, this is their knowledge, skills, and experience kind of check. So think about how you would document your working history. CV should be, as you know, aimed at what you're actually trying to achieve. So don't leave them kind of scratching their heads and having to make a judgment call. And the other thing they're expecting to see is definitely a structure chart. Now, it needn't be complicated if it's a small business, but basically, they're trying to understand the business that you are going to be executing your role in as the SMF 16. And they want to satisfy themselves that the SMF 16 role is positioned well within the business, and the lines of reporting are clear. For those of you who are, again, are coming new to role, I would suggest they would definitely want to see an induction program, and that would be specific to you. So I think they're realists. They're not expecting everybody to be fully baked at the point that they come to role. So, the more you can present this back to them in a professional way, the happier they'll be. So basically, I would do some sort of gap analysis. These are the You've got the document the FCA have published. These are the skills I need to do the role, knowledge and experience. Yeah, this is my current. And it's no problem for saying, in some areas there's a little bit of a gap, and they need to have a plan in place, a personal development plan. And here we go. This is over a reasonable time frame. This is how I'll get inducted into this particular role. And then wider than that, I'd expect to see a learning and development plan. So it could be one and the same. You make it clear this is the initial stage of my induction, and it broadens off to a wider kind of learning and development plan, which may be SMF 16 specific, but may include some wider kind of training needs as well that that you've unearthed through some sort of training needs analysis, and again with an action plan about how you're going to cover off some of those gaps. Okay, so coming towards the end now, as built. So let's just revisit those learning objectives. When we started about an hour ago, I said we'd go back into the senior managers and certification regime and just really refresh our understanding of the key components. And as part of that refresh, we would know the SMF roles, which we know need FCA approval. And then we took a deeper dive into the key elements and responsibilities of the SMF 16 role holder. I then shared with you the regulatory initiative grid. I've told you how to actually get hold of that. And then in the latter part of the session, we walked through that annual compliance calendar, and we went into more detail around some internal audit requirements. And then finally, the last 5 minutes, we've really just been looking at the FCA's process for accreditation of SMF 16s. Okay. So for those of you who are IFAC members, don't forget all those resources are available to you. So if you go into the BAT system in the normal way, under documents, you will find a whole kind of raft of information that was very helpful to SMF 16s, as you can see from the screen grab there. For those of you who need to do the test, if you go into the TNC section of the BAT system, as highlighted there, you can access the test. I've done it myself. It's 20 questions, multiple choice questions. I'm confident we've covered all of the content you would need to pass that particular test. So, as I said, given that this was billed as a 2-hour kind of session, and we've actually only run for an hour, why not log on and take it now while things are still fresh in your mind, and it's not cost you any kind of diary time there. So don't forget to claim your CPD for being on this, because good thing to be able to evidence. You're keeping your saw sharp in terms of up-to-date and relevant training. And as you know, as IFAC members, you now generate these automatically once again via the BAT system. If you've got any queries about how to do that, there's actually some videos that the team have done to illustrate how that's done. So that was it. Thank you very much for your attention, and hopefully that was useful and of value. I look forward to seeing you again on another event some at some point in the future. So for now, I wish you all a very good morning, and have a good rest of the day, and a very enjoyable weekend. Cheers for now.